Today's program has been brought to you by 360 Cookware. Their stainless steel cookware uses vapor technology to cook better tasting, more nutritional food. To learn more and receive 20% off, click their logo on our website, heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, you're listening to Let's Eat In. It's Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway, and happy, happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day. I hope you're enjoying maybe laying low and having lots of soup at home on this very brisk, chilly winter Monday in Brooklyn. So today we're talking about, we have a couple of guests who are very knowledgeable about all things food, food movement related. And I'm so thrilled. In the station we have Meredith Mozalewski. Hey.
Mozalewski, but it's very close.
And on the phone, because she's feeling a little under the weather today, we have author Robin Shulman, whose recent book is called Eat the City, A Tale of Fishers, Foragers, Butchers, Farmers, Poultry Minders, Sugar Refiners, Keen Cutters, Beekeepers, Winekeepers, and winemakers and brewers who built New York. Hi, Robin.
Hey, Kathy. Good to talk with you.
So, okay, so the reason they're here together is because Meredith is involved in a great new startup, and it's just for authors right now. I have so many authors on the show who are in the midst of their book tour or something like that. And Together is the name of the company, and it's basically a fan sourcing tool to let you bring bring crowds to events, book readings, and so forth that you're having. But tell us a little bit more about that, Mary.
Sure. So Together is basically, it makes it easy for anyone to put on a successful book event, author event. It helps that authors to connect directly with their readers all over the country in every type of community. So we really believe in the importance of book events and in the bigger kind of context of culture. Mm-hmm. We feel like they help to spark imagination and bring creativity and help bring new ideas to anyone, to mm-hmm. communities and groups of people. Helps you find cool people that you are interested, things that you're interested
thing.
In.
Yeah.
So really this helps to make those happen in a much easier way, and it kind of helps to guarantee an audience wherever the author and wherever the host wants the author to come to, because we work sort of on a Kickstarter model in that the author and the readers agree on a goal ahead mm-hmm. of time, and whether that goal is for
100 attendees,
right? It could be a number of attendees that pay for tickets. It can be a number of book sales, and it could be even a free RSVPs depending on the kind of event. So we have the ability for authors to do local events, to do travel events where they kind of help, they want to raise a little bit more money so they can help to pay for some of the
right.
costs for travel. But also we have the ability to do virtual events. So you can mm-hmm. have anything from like the biggest, auditorium style, kind of alternative event to a bookstore, to even a small kind of Skype or Google Hangout with like a book club for 10
mm-hmm.
people. So it really creates this very personal, connected experience for authors and
right.
readers.
So, and I love the name Together really implies that it's going to be a personal connection
mm-hmm.
and together the crowd or the crowdsourcing power will create the event, but it can be so impersonal sometimes doing these crowdfunding or whatever it is
mm-hmm.
and you probably do have a lot in common with somebody who's supporting the same type of books and whatever it is projects. So, on that note, you're having this event to kick off the Translit Commuter Book Club.
Yes. Yeah, actually, we did have one event already. It was
okay.
back in November. It was a great event with Andy Greenberg, who wrote a book about privacy and WikiLeaks, and it was a really, really great event. It was kind of about the revolution of privacy and anonymous and the hacker, you know, people who do that kind of privacy and coding. So it was a great event. People were really into the book. They loved that they had the ability to do this very personal discussion with the author mm-hmm. about everything that he did. And so, you know, this next one with Robin, we're really excited about. It's about a completely different topic, but it's related to New York. The whole reason that we started the Public Translit Commuter Book Club is because we were actually inspired by something very similar that happened in Seattle, so that everyone who was kind of reading on their commutes together could they could see who else was reading the same book, and then at the end of the month or whatever, they would go and meet and talk about the book together. So we thought we could do that, but make it even better by having the author actually come in and speak to the readers.
Absolutely. How cool is it that Robin's coming to the book club meeting for Eat the City? Are you looking forward to that, Robin?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I love the idea of a commuter book club. I have one time on the subway seen somebody reading my book. but it's always exciting to see somebody reading your book, and it's just exciting to bring people who are interested in this stuff together in this way and kind of have informal drinks and be able to talk about it together.
So this is your first book, correct? Eat the City?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
And you've been a reporter for the Washington Post. You've written for the New York Times and so many other. You're a pedigreed journalist, so to speak.
Yeah, I'm a journalist.
What inspired you to start, delve into this topic? Because let me just back up for those who have not, flipped through the book yet. It's wonderful. It tells the story about, a lot of people think that DIY, this urban gardening stuff, honey, beekeeping that we see these days is this newfangled trend. But actually, throughout the book, Robin proves that this has been going on for centuries, and you get into such deep history about topics such as sugar and beer and meat and vegetables. I love the story about the Harlem vegetable garden and just the evolution of that neighborhood and how the garden has, or home gardening, backyard gardening has just survived throughout this momentous history it's gone through. So that's what it's, and please go on. So if I missed anything, but what inspired you to write this book?
You know, I think the first idea for this book came when I first moved to New York City. It was the early 90s, and I came to New York to go to college, and I was living over the summer on the Lower East Side, and it was kind of a desolate neighborhood at that time on 4th Street between Avenue C and Avenue D, partly because there were so many vacant lots that people were using to shoot up and trade drugs, and there were often gunshots on the block, and then people started cleaning it up, and planting a garden there, and I kind of helped with the cleanup by shoveling up syringes into heavy-duty garbage bags for a couple months.
And, you got your green thumb.
At the end of that time, people were planting things, and I slowly started to realize that it wasn't just that people wanted to create something pretty, but people actually wanted to eat, and they were planting vegetables and fruits and herbs, and they were also planting, they also brought in roosters, and so, this was the early 90s, and I was waking up in Manhattan to the rooster's crow, so people were actually using those roosters because they made a chicken soup at the end of that time. So I kind of slowly started to realize that these gardens that were cropping up all over that neighborhood were having a transformative effect. And people were starting to spend time out on the street and in the garden. And it was really changing the feel of the place and creating a community around this food production. So I just started to wonder how else that had happened. It turned out in that very same neighborhood in the distant past, all the Jewish immigrants coming from Eastern Europe had moved into those tenement buildings and had brought chickens and roosters that they were keeping in the air shafts and in the basements and even in their own apartments. And they would have a ritual slaughterer come around once a week and slaughter the birds for the Shabbos dinner. So there's been this long history of people producing that same kind of food in that neighborhood, and I started to wonder about how else food production has transformed different places in the city. It turns out it's been pivotal to the economies of local neighborhoods and the city itself.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. And a lot of people might call, you know, this trend today in urban farming and beekeeping a sort of elitist or yuppie concern. Something along those lines I hear all the time. And throughout your book, it's actually utilitarian for so many people, and it was a survival skill to grow food, to raise the roosters and chickens and so forth, as you mentioned. So what would you, you know, what is your take on today's, like, kind of hobbyist gardeners who might be inspired by just taking up a green thumb? Do you think that that's, like, a really positive a way that we're moving towards?
I do think it's really positive. You know, I think that there are so many different things converging right now that more people are interested in local food production than in the past. But my book really tries to show how this has been a constant thing. You know, through so many eras of the city's history, there have been people, immigrants and migrants, coming from hot agricultural productive places to the city and kind of producing food here and imposing their own vision of city life on the place where they're living. But also, there's this new thing happening now where a lot of younger people are interested in having more control over the food they eat. They're interested in creating something and sharing something and creating community around food, and are investing in this. So it feels to me like several different strands are coming mm-hmm. together, and that's what creates a movement, yeah. and that's what creates change.
It seems like one kind of connective thread is that there's always this element of community and working together and enjoying the fruits of your labor together, because it's a team. It's a teamwork type of endeavor, a lot of these things.
Producing food can be a lot of work, yeah. and it's not something that you eat by yourself.
I was amazed. I love the chapter about sugar. I have to admit that I'm not done with the book yet, but I just finished that one. And that, you know, you go from talking about this desolate, abandoned Domino sugar factory that we all know, you know, we all see. It's on Kent Street, you know, in Williamsburg. Right on the waterfront, and then you go to, you know, segue into this farmer, a Puerto Rican farmer in the city who has decided to grow sugarcane in his backyard and is doing so quite successfully. Like, who would have thought? It's just so...
Yeah, I was astonished at what he was doing when I found him. I couldn't believe that he was actually succeeding in growing this tropical crop, because the Bronx is not yet a tropical climate. But he tended these sugar plants. Actually, sugarcane requires 18 months to grow, and he would tend these plants throughout the winter in his apartment, which was luckily overheated, as are many New York apartments. And so at the end of the winter, when it started to get warmer outside, he would plant the cane in his community garden. So by the time I first met him, it was August, and he had this very thick stalk of sugarcane that was taller than I was, and he hacked it down with a machete, and he gave me sugarcane to suck. So this, for him, kind of represented his past, because he came from Puerto Rico as a kid. He actually worked on a sugar plantation from the time he was 9 years old, and he did this very hard labor harvesting sugarcane, then came to New York looking for a better life and kind of retirement from sugarcane at age 18. But for him, this kind of represents the past and a way to have the past without the bitterness of it, just the sweetness of it in his garden. But for me, as I learned more about the history of New York City and learned how pivotal sugar was in the growth of the city, and how, you know, perhaps it's the food industry with the greatest impact on the development of New York, for me, his story was really the story of the city itself. So I was really glad to have found him and to have discovered that history.
Yeah, that story kind of told me that there's so many other reasons and benefits that you can get from growing something. Obviously, we all know that we could grab a packet of sugar probably for free from a deli and, you know, just buy a pound of sugar for, I don't know, $2. it's not, and we wouldn't have to grow it for 18 months and then refine it through a long and arduous process. And it's really not, you know, he wasn't doing that to flavor his coffee every day. It was to connect with the past. And I mean, I just love that story. It was really well done.
Yeah.
Bravo.
Thank you. I love his story, too.
Let's cut to a quick little musical interlude, and then we'll be right back chatting with Meredith Moe and Robin Shulman.
You're listening to River Serpentine by the Budos Band on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program has been brought to you by AmeriCraft. AmeriCraft and 360 Cookware are proud sponsors of HeritageRadioNetwork.org. AmeriCraft is an American company, and like Heritage Radio Network, they provide the best. Their 360 Cookware is made of the highest quality ingredients, like United States steel. It is made in the greenest cookware manufacturing plant in the world. AmeriCraft makes great cookware and is focused on improvement. 360 Cookware is their exclusive line. It's a contemporary line of cookware and bakeware intended to let you, the Heritage Radio Network listeners, have a unique cooking experience. Its vapor seal allows food to be cooked in its natural juices, preserving all of the vitamins, minerals, and other nutrients without added water, oils, or fats. 360 Cookware invites you to learn more about how this process works on their website, www.360cookware.com. Every Wednesday at noon, Dorothy Cann Hamilton, founder and CEO of the International Culinary Center, interviews the top chefs in the world on Chef Story. Hear from chefs like Christina Tosi.
I'm going to be the best pastry cook this restaurant's ever seen.
Francis Malman.
Cooking with fire, it's very feminine, it's very fragile.
And Jacques Pepin.
I was invited to work at the White House for John Kennedy.
Learn how the greats become great. Every Wednesday at 12 p.m. on Chef Story at HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
All right, we're back on Let's Eat In. And today's guests are Meredith Modzelewski, I don't know, and Robin Shulman, the author of Eat the City. And so tomorrow night is that event where we're together is throwing the Translit Commuter Book Club meeting where Eat the City will be discussed. Robin will be there. Can anyone go to this, Meredith?
Well, that's the slightly tricky thing is that we, you know, we've the way that it's set up through Together, it's set up like any other Together event in that we had a goal that we wanted to reach. When we reached that goal, the event turned on,
cool,
which is great. But the kind of ticket to get in is buying the book in advance. And so, unfortunately, it's not open to everyone tomorrow night, but in the future, they will be taking place at Lolita. It's going to be once a month if you go to our website, together.com.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be information on our blog about the upcoming book, which next month is Lori Davis. It's a book all about... it's basically about online dating, and it's a really fun read. It's a light read, but it's for anyone who is... you know, who's ever had an experience on OkCupid or Match.com or whatever experience you've had. It'll be relatable. So that'll be our February in the theme of love and Valentine's Day.
Oh, that's
that'll be
nice.
Our February pick. So if you go to our site and look for Lori Davis, you will be able to find that event and buy your book in advance and come to our book club.
Yeah, so that's the thing. You have to buy the book in advance. So that kind of shows that the people who are showing up, Robin, this might make a difference compared to other crowds you've seen at book readings, is that they've bought the book in advance for sure, and so they probably read it.
I'm kind of curious to see how the discussion will go, because it's very rare that I've had talks with people who have already read the book. So I'm excited. I think it will be a little bit, you know, deeper and more interesting than some of the other talks.
Yeah.
It's great. It really allows people to feel like they're, you know, they really have some responsibility over making the event happen. So, you know, they've kind of bought in already. They've, you know, they've made this commitment to, you know, either they've bought a ticket or bought the book, and they're like, okay, great, I'm in. Like, let's have a great event. So it really helps everyone to feel like somewhat responsible for a great event.
I don't know about other book clubs, because I've only been to the ones that, like, my friends kind of haphazardly organize from time to time. And obviously the author usually isn't present ever, actually, was present. And so we kind of, like, you know, critique the book a little bit. And we're talking about what we think could have been stronger. What if that happens tomorrow night at Lolita? I don't know. Would you welcome that, Robin?
I can take it. Yeah, I'd be interested in hearing people's critiques, too. Yeah, we could talk more about, like, the reasons that it is the way it is and what could have been different.
Sure. I'm going to take a stab at that, okay?
Sure.
At critiquing. I'm just kidding. One thing I was wondering is that, how did you choose the topics, the categories, the chapters of food that you did? Because there's a world of food that is produced in New York City. So what if you have this, like, enthusiast for, I don't know, hunting, who comes to the book reading or book club meeting and says, you know, you should have done this, or I don't know. So
geese and squirrels.
Was it hard to narrow
it
down?
It was hard for me to choose the categories I did. So if somebody comes with another category I haven't picked, there's a fairly good chance that I've done a little bit of research about it already, and I could talk about it. But I was trying to pick foods that were kind of, in some sense, emblematic of the city's history or something happening in the city today, and also pick foods where there was a particularly interesting story to tell.
Right.
And a person who I found who I could tell it through.
Right.
So, you know, I thought it was very important to talk about fish, because New York City is a city of islands, and fishing and the waterfront has been so critical to the city over time.
Mm-hmm.
The story of sugar was something that came up totally unexpectedly. I didn't really anticipate that when I first started.
I wouldn't have
work
thought
on
of
the
that.
Book.
Yeah.
But yeah, I never thought of that. But I was looking for people who were growing interesting things, and when I found this man growing sugarcane, I started learning more about the history of sugar and realized that it had to be its own chapter. It wasn't just going to be a mention in the chapter on vegetables, because its history was pivotal. So, you know, I came to the foods in different ways, but each one kind of tells a different and important chapter, I think, in the way the city works.
Was livestock raising ever on the table for you, and you decided to go against it?
Well, that was part of the chapter on meat, so I do mention livestock raising in that chapter, and I did think about different ways to approach it, whether to talk more about livestock raising or about butchering, but I ended up incorporating both of those into the same chapter on meat.
And it's such an unlikely topic, really, for a city like New York. It's so vast. This whole food story that we get to learn. And I consider myself as someone who, I don't know, like, has been following food for a little while, I guess, and maybe knows more than the average Joe. But I found myself learning so much from this book that, you know, and the history throughout each topic was so rich and so dense. How long did it take you to write this book?
It took me a long time. I first came up with the idea back in 2005, but I actually didn't really pursue it because I was working full-time for the Washington Post at that time. So I came back to it in 2009 and started working on it. And then starting in January 2010, I worked full-time on it for 2 years. Wow. So I had done bits of work here and there on it until 2010, and then 2 full years of research and writing.
Wow, that is killer. I hope your book tour, you get to enjoy a good long book tour and a very successful one at that.
Yeah, it's been great. I got to travel a bit and talk about the book in different places, and it's been a lot of fun.
Cool. All right, so I think it's about time for the question of the utmost importance on this show. And don't be afraid. Everyone gets this question. But I'm taking a sort of informal poll, and what do you think would make the perfect date meal, in your opinion? Who wants to go first? Meredith, since you're sitting in front of me.
Perfect date meal, meaning that you would make for a date?
That you think that would be ideal to you.
Okay. But yeah, you for could someone also, to make yeah. for me for a date.
Sure, yeah.
I think the ideal meal, without getting super specific, because I hate choosing favorites, mm-hmm. but it would have to be something that's not overly fancy, because I don't want it to be fussy. I want it to be delicious and mm-hmm. like very easily enjoyed, but not not fussed over. I mm-hmm. feel like it's more about the experience of the tastes and the maybe the ingredients, but maybe not so much like a very fussy preparation. So
no foam.
Yeah, no foams. Definitely no foams. No granitas, please. No, you know.
That's like a glorified slush puppy or something. Yeah,
basically. So, okay. I would like definitely, I would tend toward like something rustic and hearty and like, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously it's very cold outside, so I'm thinking mm-hmm. of that too. I'd go for like a boar ragu or something.
Ooh, with pasta, right?
Pasta yeah. or polenta. That sounds really good right
sounds
now.
Sounds really good.
Yeah.
All right. And what do you think, Robin?
Wow, that sounds good. I agree with the not fussiness, and because I have a cold right now, I it's hard for me to get away from the idea that the perfect date meal for me right now would be a giant bowl of soup.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But ragu sounds wonderful. That sounds good, Meredith. Good idea.
Wild boar ragu. Mm. Now, good how would stuff. We forage for that?
In New York?
Locally sourced boars.
Let's try one of those.
Yeah.
All right. Well, excellent. I hope you feel better, too, Robin. This flu epidemic, is that what has gotten you?
Yeah, I think it got me last week, and I'm just recovering now.
Oh.
All right. Wow. I've been there. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Well, that's great that you could make it for this show, and also that you're, going to come out from under the weather to the book club meeting tomorrow.
Yes. Yeah, really looking forward to that.
We'll be glad to have her. We're excited.
So, thank you, ladies, again so much. Do check out Together. Mm-hmm. That's Together, not Together, .com. Mm-hmm. And, check out Meredith Moe at Twitter for mm-hmm. more updates on what they're doing. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. Robin Shulman at Twitter. And also, Eat the City is the name of the book. Please get your hands on that soon. Thanks again, and thanks everyone at Heritage.
Thanks, Kathy. Thanks
you,
Robin.
See you next week.
Great to talk.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.